This is Soho Radio. With BB Lynch.
Hello everyone, what a beautiful day. It's as beautiful as those gorgeous photos of Princess Charlotte kissing her baby brother Prince Louis. Such gorgeous children. I really hope they catch a break in life. Hey, I'm BB Lynch and you're listening to BB Does Soho on your fantastic Soho Radio. I'm all yours for the next 60 minutes. Should we do it? BB Lynch, and that was Until You Come Back to Me by Aretha Franklin, the second Queen of Soul.
Who's the first Queen of Soul?
Who do you think?
I always thought Aretha Franklin was the Queen.
Who's the first?
You.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, how are you?
Glad I got that right.
How are you? What's been happening? Me? Well, I'm experiencing summer at the seaside for the first time in a long time, but from inside my flat. Where I've been ill and working. It's so depressing.
Here we go.
Nick,
here we go. Yes.
You know when we met today and you were really excited, like a little puppy?
Yes, I finally, after all these shows, all these hundreds of shows we've done, I finally brought content to the show.
Do you have a jingle for your content?
No. You know how producers are supposed to research all the
daily I know
papers
that, mate.
And social media
and basically.
But you know I never
show
do
104.
That.
Show 104. Go on.
Well, I noticed on Twitter this morning, thank you to Luke on Twitter, a mnemonic... Do you know what a mnemonic is?
You're such
or does the M and the N throw
I don't
you?
Know. Wasn't he Slim Shady?
Yeah. Anyway, a mnemonic for remembering the streets of Soho.
Oh, go on.
If you're walking from east to west, from Charing Cross Road. So it's Yeah, Greek Street, Fifth Street, Dean Street, Water Street, Berwick Street, Poland Street.
Yeah.
GFD, WBP.
And you can remember that. If you don't get there quickly.
Going for dinner with Billy Piper. Just remember that you're going to dinner with Billy Piper. Greek, Frith, Dean, Water, Berwick, Poland.
Do you think Billy Piper splits the bill?
I just think it was somebody's name beginning with a B.
Have
and
you
a
been
P.
for dinner with Billy Piper?
You could say British Petroleum if you wanted to.
How old are we?
I've never been to dinner with Billy Piper. No.
Thanks so much for your content.
Anyway, you can have that. That's you're welcome, everyone. Next time you're lost.
You dumb.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about today's show. Let me tell you about today's show. Our guest is the global thought leader on female involuntary childlessness, the amazing Jodie Day. Jodie will be telling us about her incredible work and all about her Soho. So please join in. Tweet at Soho Radio and at BB Lynch. And please, God, just start some kind of petition to stop Nick ever bringing content in again. Yeah. Baby, don't make me spell it out for you. All of the feelings that I got for you can't be explained, but I can try for you. Yeah, baby, don't make me spell it out for you. You keep on asking me the same questions. Why? And second guessing all my intentions. Should know by the way I use my compression that you got the answers to my confessions. It's like I'm powerful with a little bit of tender and emotional sexual bender. Mess me up, yeah, but no one does it better. There's nothing better. That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way.
So good, so good, so fucking real. That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
You know I love you, so please don't stop it.
You got me right here in your jean pocket. Laying your body on a shag carpet. Oh, you know I love you, so please don't stop it. It's like I'm just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
So good, so good, so fucking real. That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel. BB does Soho on Soho Radio Culture, SohoRadioLondon.com, and click on Culture. And we have an app, an actual app. Go to the App Store. How do you like them apples? And
are you reading this? By the way, sorry for the swearing in that last
Who swore?
Janelle Monáe.
She's so naughty.
I know.
Pansexual.
She is. Still no excuse, though.
Potty mouth pansexual Janelle Monáe. And that was Potty mouth pansexual Janelle Monáe. And Make Me Feel, guess what? Our guest is here. Jodie Day is the founder of Gateway Women, the global friendship and support network for childless women, and the author of Living the Life Unexpected. This is a long tagline. 12 weeks to your plan B for a meaningful and fulfilling future without children. The global thought leader on female involuntary childlessness, Jodie, is speaking at this week's Fertility Fest in London. And even though she's in front of me, it's going to embarrass her, I do have to say she's one of the most inspirational women I've ever met. And every time I interview her, I cry. So, Alexa, good luck, everyone, today. Welcome to Soho Radio, Jodie.
It's lovely to be here, Bibi.
How are you?
I'm really, really well.
Yeah, you look really well.
I know, shocking. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. So, yeah. Instantly, Jodie's annoyed me a little bit, and I have to say this, Jodie. You instantly took producer Nick's side there about Billy Piper.
Well, it's not that. It's just that he did have a point. Helpful segue, which
go
is
on,
that
then.
Billy Piper was actually amazing recently in Yerma, the Lorca play, sort of a modern version of it, where she plays, well, a woman driven mad by childlessness. I mean, she brought the house down, apparently. So,
and she does have kids.
Yeah, I think she does.
Yeah, and you'd kind of think, is that... So that's actually even more impressive, isn't it, that she got there?
I guess so, but she's a really good actress. But it's that thing that, you know, well, so she's a mother, so she couldn't play a childless woman, as if childless actresses somehow can't play mothers, or childless novelists can't write mothers.
Yeah. I guess my feeling with that is, yeah, you're totally right, but I suppose it's what I'm saying is so many people that you work brilliantly on all this, and I write sometimes about this, and it's what I rail against is people not getting it.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of applaud that she somehow, there wasn't a surface performance, it was apparently, I never saw it, you know, getting there. So Gateway Women,
yes,
is this incredible. We were just working out that Jodie had a book launch, was the first version was
2013.
Oh my god, so that was a million years ago when we met. Well, not a million years, you know what I mean. So Gateway Women is this incredible network that helps involuntary childless women heal and discover a different future. Why did you set up Gateway Women?
Well, it was actually 7 years ago this year. So last month it was 7 years ago. Thank you. So, and I was really, I think, because nobody would let me talk about it. I mean, it started off as a blog.
Yeah.
And, you know, that very first blog that I wrote, the next day I got my first piece of PR. It was extraordinary. And I thought, well, if one woman reads this and gets it, that would be one more person than I've managed to feel understood by.
Yeah.
And, you know, women from all over the world started writing back and leaving comments saying, you know, how can you know the exact words that are in my head? You know, I thought it was just me. And, you know, although, you know, Me Too at the moment has a very specific meaning, those two words, Me Too, are the most healing words you can hear when you're struggling with something and you think you're alone.
And what was your story then?
My story is kind of quite a complicated one, as they all are. There's no sort of, you know, people think, well, you know, childless women are, didn't want them, couldn't have them.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much more complex than that. I grew up in a sort of fairly unhappy home. You know, the idea of having kids wasn't really on my mind as I was growing up. I just wanted to get up, survive, get out, and see the world, as we were all told to in the 70s. So much so that actually, for me, Air Hostess Barbie was my favourite. So she even had her
producer
own.
Nick.
She even had her own little sort of, you know, little Pan Am bag. Loved it. That little shoulder bag, nice blue. And so I just thought, you know, that's what I wanted to do. And it wasn't that, you know, my mum said, you know, don't get married, don't have children. It was just that she talked about all the other things that were possible for me that really hadn't been possible for her. And so that was my focus as I went into young adulthood. I did get pregnant accidentally when I was 20, which scared the bejesus out of me. Mm. I was terrified of becoming a mum, terrified of ruining my life, as they had told us would happen at school. Had an abortion, which I don't regret. I wouldn't have been a good mum at that point. What I didn't know is that I would never conceive again.
Before we get into that, I'm just going to jump in. Jodie is featuring in a feature I've written in Stella magazine soon about the childlessness after abortion.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, Jodie, it's so...
I think you cried.
I cried. I can't interview you without crying. And then I rang my sister and said, listen to this quote, and just sobbed down the phone to Yazzie. So I won't give you a spoiler, but it's incredibly powerful and incredibly relevant. And I hate it when people say it's really important work, but it really is important work. So you didn't fall pregnant again.
No.
You were married?
Yeah. I got married at 26, which, looking back on it now, is so young.
Yeah, I know.
But I thought it was really, really grown up. But I realise now it was actually the most grown up I'd ever been at that point. So I thought I was really grown up. And I said to my, you know, the man who's going to be my husband, I'm not sure that I want kids. He was like, okay. And then sort of a few years went on, and I think my idea of what a family might be had really changed. He was one of six. His family really just kind of adopted me. And I began to think, actually, OK, maybe having kids might be really nice. And so I said when I was 29, you know, actually, I kind of think I do want a family. And he was like, OK. And so we started trying. And I never managed to conceive. I had an operation to check that everything was OK. No damage from the abortion. In fact, the very avuncular Harley Street gynecologist, you know, as I came round, said, absolutely first class property. Finest uterus I've seen all week. Jeez. You lovely young people go off and have lots of sex. That was it. That was the sum total of my fertility
advice. Jacob Rees-Mogg was a surgeon.
Oh, God, that is a terrifying thought. It was a gynecologist.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
No.
Have another one.
No.
Okay, Jake. I know what this question means, yeah. But, you know, so how was that for you?
Oh, well, let's just say I spent my 30s in what I later came to call baby mania, which was just doing everything I possibly could to get pregnant. Obviously, we did take the surgeon's advice, but sex didn't seem to be enough. So I visited every alternative practitioner, every nutritionist, did every kind of diet, peed on every colour of stick, you know, you name it. I tried it, and we were sort of...
You went to a shaman.
I did. He cracked an egg on my head. And then put it in
Your
a glass.
It does look good. I mean, maybe that's a secret.
You put it in a glass. Condition.
It's great condition.
Yeah.
It's a lovely omelette.
What?
Yeah. And and he actually told me that perhaps the reason I wasn't getting pregnant is because deep down my husband didn't want to have children. So that wasn't terribly helpful. Not true, really. But so we were, you know, getting on, and it got to my sort of mid to late 30s. I was 37. And my husband said to me, I think we should do IVF. And that was a really, you know, huge moment for me, because I realised then that I couldn't bring a baby into the mess that our marriage had become. You know, sadly, my husband's drinking had kind of really got out of control. It was pretty chaotic. I was the one holding the wheels on the bus. We were running a kind of very trendy interior design business together. And it was, you know, we were kind of like Z-list celebrities, and it had gone to his head. And the whole thing was just a complete mess.
So by him suggesting IVF, which would have made this real and maybe actually happen.
Yeah.
You had a
I had an epiphany.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, I'd grown up in chaos. And I thought, I can't do this to my kids.
Was there any sense of relief at any stage in this? So when you decided that marriage would break up, did you give up hope of having a baby then?
No, and I think I was really fueled by the whole baby thing. I mean, I think I got out, you know, I got out of that marriage so damn fast. And we've been together 16 years. And I was back out and dating, you know, really, really soon into the brand new, brave new world of internet dating.
Oh, well done. That's another show, Jodie Day.
Yeah. And I was not in any shape to be dating, but I was just like, I'm going to meet someone, I'm going to do IVF, you know, I'm going to get in under the wire. And so I was out there like a kind of, you know, mad, loose ovary cannon. Looking for some...
And there's the next book. That's the title.
You know, and I had two relationships after my, you know, after my divorce. Neither of them were right. One guy didn't want children. The other guy, luckily I wasn't able to conceive because, you know, he turned out to be emotionally abusive. So I had that going on as well. So by the time I kind of got out of that relationship, which I stayed in much longer than I should have done, because there was this whole kind of, we're going to do IVF, we're going to have a baby thing going on that was sort of being dangled. You know, I was 44 and that was it.
And what was that like, letting go of that, letting go of the dream?
Oh, letting go sounds a lot more passive than it was. You know, well, the bottom just fell out of my world. You know, my heart broke.
Yeah.
And I didn't think I would ever really be able to carry on. Came as close to wanting to die as I ever want to be.
Gosh, she's made me cry again instantly. I totally get it. I mean, well, we'll get into that later. But so you created and founded Gateway Women to help you?
Initially, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a couple of years after, you know, that day when I realised I definitely wasn't going to be a mum. And during that period, I was talking to people about how I was feeling about things, but no one was really hearing me. You know, therapists, doctors,
no one really identified why I was struggling so much with this. And you know what the bingos are like. And, you know, oh, you still look young. You've got time. You know,
all that sleep.
You know, oh, yes, sir. Yeah. You know, have one of mine.
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't you just adopt?
Yeah.
All of this kind of stuff. The fact that I was, you know, single, broke, self-employed, living in a, let's just say, and I'll put the air quotes here, a studio flat.
Yeah.
With a lovely view of the West Wing. You know.
Was it a tent on a balcony? You dream of a tent on a balcony.
I sublet that. So, you know, there's no way I was good. I could have adopted, even if I'd been in any emotional shape to do so.
We have such... For stories that are so varied, you know, how the situation arises for people, ours is so similar. Mm. I think that's why it always resonates with me, because ours is so similar. And there is, I had someone say to me once, I wish I'd known you when you were younger. You're like, thank you. And then came in at breakfast once and said, they're doing womb transplants now. I was like, where'd you go with that? And I always have people, did you have this? People just, all I have is people, the thing they would talk to me about when they talk to me is about not having children. So it can be apropos of nothing, out for a drink.
Right.
And it's like the thing they see is the thing they respond to.
Right.
Gateway Women then was for you to kind of help yourself a little bit to so you were searching for other
people? Yeah, I mean, I was searching online for anything. Yeah. And there were no books out there. Dr. Google didn't have any advice. There were only support groups and things for women who were struggling to conceive.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't realise, because I'd never identified as infertile, so I'd never gone out there looking for kind of infertility support. But I'm surprised they haven't broken the internet, the amount of things that are out there for women who are struggling to conceive. And then there were a couple of websites for women who are child-free by choice.
Yeah.
And they scared me, because they were really aggressive, really anti-children, anti-parents. They called sort of parents breeders. And I was freaked out, because I thought, is that what people are going to think about me, that I hate children? Mm. And so I started my blog not really knowing what it would become. It was just, I just put it out there. I didn't realise what a huge taboo I was breaking by being open, putting my name on it, my photograph on it, not hiding behind anything. Just saying, you know, this is me, this is my story, this is how I feel about my childlessness. And basically the world went, me too.
Which is so, and how does Gateway Women help people?
Well, 7 years on, in lots of different ways. So we've got sort of private online communities, workshops called the Reignite Weekends, which happen across the UK, and now they're in America and Canada as well, coming up in Ireland and Belgium later this year. So that's like an amazing sort of weekend, which really helps women sort of through the process. There's my book, of course, which is there, and online courses. And also, I think just me being out there as someone who's still standing up, still speaking about it. And I think being out the other side of my grief is something that we don't see enough of. The stories of childless women are either women who are destroyed and their life is never going to be okay, or it's the miracle baby story, or it's the kind of, you know, well, this is a woman who ruined her life by leaving it too late, ha ha.
And yeah, I just wanted such aggression with that.
Oh, gosh, don't get me started on that one. And so for me, I think to be in a way almost like out and proud as a childless woman, and showing that there is life after childlessness.
You are inspiring because you are there.
Yeah.
And it's like, so here's the truth. I came to your launch in
2013.
I'm not very good with dates and numbers. I don't know why. So I came there and I got your book and I still haven't read it. And do you know why? Because I can't start that process yet. Mm. Although what that means is I've effectively lost 10 years of my life from 42 to now. In the book and everything you say, actually, and lots of stuff you write, you mentioned finding your tribe. Mm. How important is that?
I'd say that it's that and understanding that what you're experiencing is grief are the two most important things.
And you find your tribe through Gateway Women.
I mean, we've got more than 100 meetups around the world, free meetups around the world, where you can meet other childless women in your town.
What happens at the Reignite Weekend? Yeah.
So the Reignite Weekend it's kind of a therapeutic weekend. It's for a small group of women. Day one, the Saturday, is really about the past, how we got here, how we got into this room together. And we really look at our stories and how we feel about childlessness. And we do a little bit of work around consciousness raising. Because one of the things that really holds childless women back from kind of claiming their life is the fact that, for example, there is no positive word in the English language to describe a childless woman past her childbearing
years. Hi, spinster.
Yeah. Which
career woman is another one. That's a sort of, that one's in inverted commas. And I'm like, well, where are the career men then? Yeah. What you're actually saying is you've chosen to work over having children.
Yeah.
I was on a radio interview years ago, actually, with in Ireland. And this, was a big piece about me in an Irish paper. And this guy interviews us, says, right, so you'd be one of those career women then. And I was like, no, I've just been working since I was a teenager without a break because I haven't had kids. Yeah. And so it might look like a career, but it's not. I said, what would you have had me do? Stay at home on the dole and just wait to get knocked up? Mm. And you could hear him shuffling his papers. Good. Thinking, who put this feckin' feminist on my show? Yeah. Probably some researcher got fired, you know, because it's that assumption. You know, so you can be a working mum, and when that comes with problems too, because people don't like that. You can be a stay-at-home mum. People don't like that either. You know, but a childless woman, you're either this kind of ferocious Cruella de Vil career woman, or you're a sad sack. And it's like, well, I don't meet those women.
Don't you think? Don't you just wish people were honest about this on every side? Because if the truth was how motherhood sometimes isn't the dream, we would be feeling less grief that we've lost out on the love. The, you know, we can never be satisfied now. Our life is a life, you know, sustaining, you know, surviving grief. And it's easy for the mother, surely, because then they don't have to perpetuate that nonsense, and they find their tribe. I mean, they have their tribe, but you know what I mean. But their true tribe, just be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is starting to happen. You know, these articles that are coming up where, you know, mothers and parents are starting to write and about how they regret, you know, becoming parents, which is extremely problematic. Obviously, that's got to be done so carefully because that's not an article you ever want to read about your own mum.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you're grown up.
Yeah.
But I it's not that they, you know, we have such a kind of unnuanced understanding of what that means, because they're not saying I don't love my kids. They're saying I've been stitched up by motherhood. This was not what I signed up for. Mm. And the idea that motherhood is the most meaningful and fulfilling thing you can do with your life is quite new. It certainly wasn't like that in the 70s when I was growing up. I mean, I grew up around women who just couldn't wait to, you know, for their children to go to bed so they could talk about something more interesting with the grown-ups.
See, and I think you and I both come from that same age. Yeah. And as well, my mum had seven. And my mum never told me to have children. She didn't say not to, but she certainly loved the fact that it looked like I was going to, you know, have a career of some kind, you know. I think she liked that. Mm. We had too many options, almost. You know, we were told that. So I interrupted you. So the Reignite Weekends, the first day is about the past and how we got here, and the second day?
It's really about where we are now, where we want to go with our lives. So that's when we look at what I call the Plan B. And Plan B is just shorthand, because it's not really a plan. It's really about how do I want to create a life? What do I want to shape my meaning around? If it's not this idea of motherhood, how do I find that? How do I explore that? And how do I get support whilst I do it? Because it's a process, not a plan.
Your brilliant book, I've read, I've heard, I haven't read it, so I'm not sure I will read it. Living the Life Unexpected, and it has a great kind of subtitle, 12 Weeks to Your Plan B for a Meaningful and Fulfilling Future Without Children. How is that possible in 12 weeks? 10 years on, I'm still a little wreck.
Well, I could have called it 12 Steps, but I refused to.
Yeah,
It's a catchy subtitle. It's unlikely that you're going to get all the, you know, get to where I'm at into it. It didn't take me 12 weeks, but you can certainly be introduced to all of the different topics and areas that you need in order to move forward in 12 weeks.
You know, the tribe thing, I want to go back to that. The only positive that's come from this for me are the women I've met.
They are awesome, aren't they?
It's just insane.
Yeah.
It's just, it's like,
it kind of spoils you though, because I meet such great women who are prepared to be open and vulnerable and funny, and because I call us the reluctant pioneers. Yes. That actually then when I sort of go to sort of in amongst sort of normal people, you know, what Liz Hurley famously would call the civilians. You remember that? I was just like, expecting some deep and meaningful conversation. It's like, oh, right. I've managed my expectations right down. Because, you know, we are a pretty awesome bunch of women.
Because it, the courage it takes, I think, to face it and, oh, you know.
And the dark humour that comes out from grief, coming through grief, you know. Once you've been to the dark side and you've made it back, you have a much darker, richer sense of humour. Because it's like, I've survived my worst nightmare, you know.
And
how seriously am I going to take the rest of my life?
And it is the worst nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah.
Would you have done everything differently? Well, you kind of couldn't, because you were young.
I don't think so. I mean, looking back on it, because actually I'm very happy with where I am now.
Oh, my God, that's so amazing to hear.
Yeah.
genuinely.
I mean, I think I feel as at peace with my childlessness now as if I'd chosen it, which at the moment, you know, touch wood.
How long do you think that took you?
I've been feeling that way now for about 3 years. So, yeah, so it was probably a good five-year period to get that to get to that point.
Does your book tell you how to open up the grief?
Yeah, very much so.
Does it?
Yes.
But then I think I'm scared of the avalanche of that. Does the book tell me how to hold it, you know, how to function within it?
Absolutely. We live in a very grief-phobic society that tells us that our emotions will overwhelm us and destroy us. Yeah. And actually, the path to our healing is through that storm. Peace lies on the other side of it. But you can't get there without going through it, and it's not going to kill you. But you can spend your whole life in a ghastly waiting room.
God, that's so brilliant. Mm. Publicly talking about not having children and... See, you do it in such a lovely way. I'm less nice about it because I just feel fierce about it and so angry about it, and I rail against it. And for me, it's not just the pain of not having kids. Mm. It's the insulting PS of how we're seen and the like you've said, the language, the as a mother, you know, the hardworking families, because I don't do any work. I don't do anything. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So it's all that's around it. I had a journalist call me a misogynist because because I apparently was not allowing mothers to have their experience. And so I asked her, what's the word for someone that doesn't allow non-mothers to have their experience? And of course, she blocked me. You've reached over 2 million people. So we have a voice. We deserve a voice. Why does us having a voice upset people so much?
I think it really challenges them because it challenges the conditioning of something which is called pronatalism. Pronatalism is the ideology that underpins all of this, and it's the idea that the only meaningful way to be a fully adult member of society is to be a parent. And it is so fundamental to our understanding of what it means to be adult, and it comes with such huge dollops of privilege, which is something I'll be talking about at Fertility Fest on Saturday, that it's when those people who are the holders of privilege, whether it be white privilege or any other kind of privilege, are challenged by someone who doesn't hold that privilege, they feel offended. Because actually what we're asking for is equality, but they see us as actually trying to take something away from them. There's a concept that that people of colour talk about, which is called white fragility, which is that if one of the aspects of white privilege is that you can spend your whole life not talking about race. You know, that is one of the things of white. You don't have to talk about race. And so therefore, you have no experience. You have no language to talk about race. So when a person of colour wants to talk about race with you, you find it very confronting. You freak out. You worry about saying the wrong thing. The whole thing can kind of escalate very quickly. You want to back out. That's called white fragility. I think there's something very similar happening around parental fragility. And I think when we try to talk about childlessness, they freak out.
I think you're totally right. Are we also suggesting that it's not quite what we're told it is? So are they... It's almost like protesting too much sometimes.
Yeah, because of course they have their fantasies about our lives too. So, you know, that we spend all our time, you know, in our sort of beautiful big houses with white sofas and white fluffy dogs, taking endless holidays and being very rich, of course, because we don't have children, and all of that sleep. And as sort of so much sleep, you know, and as someone who's, you know, had insomnia for many years, I'll just like, I will raise you in a sleep off, you know, but I'm not allowed to be tired. I'm not allowed to have problems. I'm not allowed to struggle. I'm not allowed to worry because, you know, because I'm not a parent, and they don't really understand what it's like to be us, just as we don't understand the full reality of what it's like to be them. We project that their lives are perfect and that they've got everything sorted because they got their dream. They project onto us basically their internal world, but with more money and more freedom. You know, when you can't even go to the bathroom on your own, you know, the idea of maybe a house that doesn't have kids in it must some days be very, very attractive.
I don't understand. You know the whole thing, you can't be, you know, you can't feel it unless it's happened to you. Mm. But we all make that leap. Before I, you know, when I was a kid and I didn't know someone, had, you know, before my mum died, I'm sure I could have empathised to the extent that I would allow myself to empathise and try and feel how bad it was, or at least say, I know this is a horrible thing. Mm. I don't know what it feels like, but I'm here for you. I don't understand why this subject appears to be the acceptable bigotry. Yes. To me, and it seems that people don't try to even understand.
I think the word, I think you've got it there, it's acceptable. I mean, when I look back to, you know, what it was like watching TV in the 70s and how a gay character was a figure of fun just because they were gay. That, you know, their gayness immediately put them in the funny box as being someone it was okay to laugh at. And how, you know, in my lifetime, you know, how the LGBTQ kind of community has found its tribe, has found its voice, has changed the laws, has changed the cultures. I mean, if you watch a 1970s comedy programme now, I mean, literally, you practically have to hide behind the sofa because it's just like, I can't believe this. You know, and it was acceptable prejudice, acceptable bigotry then. And you're right, this is still acceptable and it has to change.
Do you think it will change?
I'm going to make it change.
Tell us about Fertility Fest. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm appearing three times, so I sort of feel like Bonnie Langford or something.
You've got so much energy because you don't have children.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, all that sleep and money. And so on Tuesday night, the festival kicks off with the book launch of Jessica Hepburn's book, which is called 21 Miles, Swimming in Search of the Meaning of Motherhood. And Jessica is one of the two directors of the festival, another one of those amazing childless women I've met through my work. And I'm one of the 21 women that she had lunch with in fattening herself up for her Channel Swim. And she asked each woman to give her a word, which she then turned into a kind of almost like a chant that she used as she was swimming, which was extraordinary. So that it kicks off. Then on Wednesday night, Jessica and I are sharing the stage at an event called There's More to Life Than Having Children. And then there's kind of loads of other childless and infertility bloggers who'll be on the stage doing sort of short presentations, which is fantastic. And then on Saturday, I'm doing my Fertility Fight Club talk.
Why? What?
I know, which is 10 minutes talks. And they're going to be live streamed on Facebook. So if you go to fertilityfest.com, you'll find those links. And mine is Calling Time on Pronatalist Privilege. So I'll be very much talking about really the language and the privileges and how we can start to dismantle them to make actually a fairer society for all of us, including parents.
Yes, yeah. That's the thing. Be honest about it and we all know. Yeah. Are you prepared for a little onslaught after?
Probably. I'm not quite as brave as you in that front. You know, I'm kind of braver in writing, so I'm not a natural performer, so I'm a bit nervous, I'll be honest. But,
you'll be fantastic. Yeah. The inspirational Jodie Day is talking at Fertility Fest this week. Go to fertilityfest.com for details and tickets. Visit gateway-women.com for help, advice, love and support and info on the Reignite Weekends. And Living the Life Unexpected, Bluebird Pam McMillan, is available online and in bookstores. For updates on everything Gateway Women, follow them on Twitter and Insta at Gateway Women.
BB does Soho. Lucky Soho.
I'm Bibi Lynch and you're listening to Soho Radio Culture, sohoradiolondon.com, and click on Culture. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. Coming to you from our beautifully bijou pop-up and studio on Great Windmill Street. It is very beautifully bijou today. Bijou. Nick.
Bijou.
Bless
bijou.
You. I'm joined in the studio by the brilliant Jodie Day and it's time for My Soho.
Soho Radio. My Soho with Bibi Lynch.
Bibi Lynch.
Bibi Lynch.
Bibi Lynch. Jodie Day.
Bibi Lynch, hello.
Bibi Lynch, hello. Before you ever came to Soho, where were you born?
I was born in London.
Yay!
I was actually born in the Catholic Home for Fallen Women.
What? Less yay!
In the Honeypot Lane in Harrow.
Oh, yes. My God. Yes. There's a story.
Indeed.
Whoa, does that still exist?
It can't.
No, it was the DVLA Centre for a while.
Sounds like something that J.K. Rowling would have made up.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I think it was a bit gothic, actually.
So before, I'm not getting into it. When you were a kid, what did the name Soho mean to you? Was it evoking you? What did you think when someone would say, going down to Soho?
Well, I left London when I was a kid. So, grew up in the countryside. And I think Soho, it was just dangerous, sleazy, you know, sort of something to do with the Rolling Stones. It was like nothing to do with anything anyone I knew had anything to do with. You know, I spent my sort of early childhood in Berkshire and then my teenage years in the Lake District. It was a long way away, culturally and geographically, from my life.
What does Soho mean to you now?
Wow, it's changed so much. I mean, when I moved back to London when I was 19 and was working just down the road in Covent Garden. And I was the what's now called an intern. Oh. You know, it used to be called just I'm on the dole, but I'm begging you for a job.
Yeah. Work experience.
Yeah. In a fashion PR agency. And one of my jobs, as well as walking the boss's dog, feeding the meter and tidying the showroom, was delivering the clothes to the magazines. And the walk from Covent Garden, carrying huge amounts of clothes on each, you know, in dress bags, would take me through Soho up to Great Broadwick, you know, street where some of the magazines were. So that it was very much part of my route early on in London.
So and media.
Yeah, and I found it very exciting. You know, it was very dirty. There was no grass. I loved it.
Nothing green.
No, nothing green at all.
And now it's kind of... you live... Are we allowed to say where you live?
Yeah.
So half the time in Ireland, half the time in Ibiza. So are you over here much?
No, I mean, this is my second time this year. And I mean, I moved out to Ireland for good last year. And this time being here, I really feel like a visitor in my own city. And of course, it's beautiful, you know, today. It's actually nicer weather than Ibiza. But also this sense of being like a flaneur. Because I'm just walking around, looking at everything, taking it in, seeing it with slightly fresh eyes.
And enjoying it more?
Actually, I'm really enjoying it this trip, yeah.
We always ask our My Soho guests to think of two songs that, for whatever reason, remind them of Soho. Yeah. And which is your first choice?
Katrina and the Waves.
And why did you choose, and Walking on Sunshine, why did you choose this one?
Because I just really remember before I moved to London how much I loved this song. And then when I, you know, walking through Soho, carrying all those dress bags, but feeling like on top of the world, I thought I've made it.
Here it is.
I'm not afraid to
Oh, producer Nick just raised his arm. What do you? What?
I was cueing you. That was pointing.
Sorry,
that was
I'm so sorry. What are you wearing?
A t-shirt.
What's it say? What it's got on it?
It's got Mickey Mouse on it.
How old are you?
I got it at Disneyland.
You've just been?
No, last year.
Oh. Hi, Jodie Day.
This is a bit random.
It's just sexual tension. So Jodie came and said...
That's your idea of sexual tension.
Write down sexual tension. So Jodie came and said, well, I don't know what I would do for the Soho questions. And I'm going, yes, you do. Anything, say what you want. I'll ask you some. Okay. And if you have an answer, great. Sure. And if you don't, well, I'll upset Nick a little bit more. Do you have a favourite Soho bar, restaurant or venue?
Yeah, it's not there anymore.
Perfect.
But it was called Polo Polo Polo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Polo Bar.
And it was just round the corner from St. Martin's School of Art, just on that corner. And used to go there. It was incredibly cheap and very filling. And when I was a quote-unquote intern,
yeah,
you know, around here, it was a favourite place. And also I used to be a model at St. Martin's College of Art for their fashion students. So
really?
I used to rock up on a Saturday morning wearing whatever kind of latest fashion victim outfit I'd kind of cobbled together on my sewing machine, and from various bits of samples that I'd sort of, you know, half-inched from the showroom.
And, so you'd make the clothes?
Well, because they were kind of, they wanted to draw, sort of, I was
You did their designs? You made up their designs?
Well, no, they were practising learning how to draw fashion.
Right.
And so they needed fashionable, people to draw. So myself and my friend Chloe Cunningham, her mum was one of the people who was one of the students in the class. We would rock up
in
the most outrageous outfits we could find. And be drawn. I've still got some of those drawings. They're amazing. And then we'd go to Polo Polo afterwards because we were very, very thin and very, very poor and enormous plates of pasta.
You could get steak, chips and spaghetti for £4.50, I remember.
Yeah. And steak and spaghetti.
Yeah, chips and spaghetti.
And chips.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have loved it.
I can't bear this.
I think I say bring back Polo Polo Polo. Polo.
Bring back Polo Polo Polo. How tall are you?
Well, I'm now 5'9", but I was 5'9¾". I almost made it to 5'10", but I've started shrinking.
My sister thinks I've got the old woman shrink. I'm not saying you're an old woman, I am.
I'm older than you, BB.
I don't think you are. But you, you're taller than me.
Yeah.
I'm
definitely taller than you.
I was surprised when you stood up. Is this fascinating?
Yes. Absolutely. Yes, prizing.
And it works so well on radio, I think, don't you?
We are on air, by the way.
What's your most memorable night out in Soho?
I think actually it was at the Wag Club in the 80s. And it was rather memorable because I went blind on the dance floor.
What?
Yeah, because someone gave me a whiff of amyl nitrate and I didn't know what it was. I don't know, I thought it was maybe perfume or something like that. I just sniffed it and I went completely blind and I just carried on dancing.
I've never had that.
I just had like this banging headache and just kind of lost all my vision. I could just see all the white smoke.
Were you at least relaxed about your?
I was. Yeah, I carried on dancing. I've gone blind. I'll just keep dancing.
How long did the blindness last?
Just a minute or so, but it was an extraordinary. I mean, that was an extraordinary club, and you know,
Chinese restaurant now.
Oh, you no way.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Oh, listen to us.
How old? Oh, back in the day.
Oh, you're lucky you had a cardboard
It's where
box.
David Bowie filmed the Blue Jean video where he was dressed up and in the window playing And every time I walk past there today, and I always think of that because when they made it, you would have been able to see him stand in the window with the guitar.
Yay.
Chinese restaurant.
Chinese restaurant, amyl nitrate. We haven't had Poppers on the show, have we?
No. What? You mean do the show on Poppers?
How attractive would that be? Can you please, Jodie Day, sum up Soho in three words?
Oh, Lord, I can't answer this one. But okay. Let me just think. I suppose it's sex, drugs and rock and roll.
Okay, we'll count that. Please introduce your final Soho memory song. Yeah, all right, Nick's counting the words. Yes. did you choose and why?
It's London Calling by The Clash. And it's really because when I first moved to London, it was all about living in big shared houses because we couldn't afford. Actually, that hasn't changed about London.
No.
Except we're all living in the much older.
Yeah.
And there was just a guy who lived in that shared house who used to play this record over and over and over again. And it was just this sense of like, yeah, I'm in London.
God. covered, you boys and girls. London calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania has bitten the dust. London calling, see we ain't got no swing except for the rain and the crunch of thing. The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in. Meltdown expected, the wheat is going thin. Engines stop running, but I have no fear, 'cause London is drowning. I live by the river to the imitation zone. Forget it, brother, you can go it alone. London calling to the zombies of death. Quit holding out and draw another breath. London calling, and I don't wanna shout, but while we were talking, I saw you nodding out. London calling, see we ain't got no hide, except for that one with the yellowy eyes. The ice age is coming, the sun's zooming in. Engines stop running, the wheat is going thin. A nuclear error, but I have no fear, 'cause London is drowning.
Such a great song, isn't it?
The Clash, London Calling.
Oh, listen to you. What's that called when you do that?
What? Tell people what the record was.
But after, back something.
Back announcing.
Back announcing.
Yeah. I back anode the record.
Oh,
you.
Well done you.
Yeah.
So while The Clash was singing live in the studio, Jodie Day said that she's writing a book about me.
Yes.
What's it? Well, that's so lovely. I thought you ought to know.
Thank you so much.
Tell us more.
Well, I'm actually writing a novel at the moment, so that's kind of one of the many things I'm trying to fit into the all of that free time that childless women have got. And it's actually a comic novel about childlessness. It's a farce. And
about Bebe Lynch.
And one of the things I'm doing this week in London, rather terrifyingly, is sort of, you know, showing it for the first time to a literary agent. It's not finished. It's very much work in progress. But my idea was to, in a way, to use comedy as a way to get a lot of the difficult stuff into the mainstream in a way that people can kind of, you know, digest. In the way that sort of Bridget Jones got so much around singleness into the mainstream.
This is clever.
I want to use comedy as a way to really kind of basically have us included in the story of modern women.
And you found funny in it?
Yeah.
Oh, we've lost your microphone.
How did you judge that? That's so weird.
It's suddenly.
Okay.
And you have found humour in this?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the things that people laugh at us about, when we turn it and we kind of laugh at ourselves about it, it's huge. I mean, everything to do with fertility, you know, the lead character. I mean, she's single, childless, 45, going into the menopause. And, you know, this is not normally, you know, this is a figure of fun normally.
Yeah.
But I'm actually making her the heroine.
Oh, I'm loving this.
Yeah.
Bebe's book. This is great news. Producer Nick,
mm-hmm.
You know that I like to give our listeners take home. What have you, why are you moving like that?
Because what, I gave my mic to...
Oh, that's good of you. What's your... what have you learnt from today's show?
I tried to do everything seamlessly on the show, and then, you know, you pointed all out to everybody. I learned that if you're walking through Soho, you should remember to say, going for dinner with Billy Piper, and it will help you remember the streets.
Joe, do you write that down? You might need that later. I need to say goodbye and thank our guests. Thank you, Jodie Day. The inspirational Jodie Day is talking at Fertility Fest this week. Go to fertilityfest.com for details and tickets. Visit gateway-women.com for help, advice, love and support and info on the Reignite Weekends, which are supposed to be amazing. And Living the Life Unexpected, Bluebird, Pan Macmillan is available online and in bookstores. For updates on everything Gateway Women, follow them on Twitter and Insta at Gateway Women. And yeah, I've written this a piece about Jodie in Stella, so I'll let you all know when it's out on my Insta, and my Twitter, but do have a little look and read. Thank you, producer Nick.
Thank you,
Billy Piper, and most of all, thank you for listening. That's it from me, BB Lynch, until Tuesday week. Stay tuned to your wonderful Soho Radio, and I'll leave you with Bessie Banks and Go Now. Seriously, go. Stop being so needy. Love you, Soho.
You've already said.